All right, welcome to another Deep Dive with a Deep Dive. Today, we're going to be looking at, well, a pretty unique case. It's a Connecticut Supreme Court case, and it's from 2005.
2005, yeah.
Yeah, so a bit back. It's called Gursky v. Rosenblum and Filon, LLC. And, you know, just to get us started, the question that's really at the heart of this, you know, can you assign your legal malpractice claim? Like, think about that for a second. Can you give that away to the very person who sued you in the first place?
Whoa. That's counterintuitive. It seems like you'd be handing a weapon to your enemy.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It really is. It's like almost like giving them more ammunition.
Right? Yeah. Right.
So to dig into all this, you know, we've got some really interesting sources here today. First and foremost, we've got the Connecticut Supreme Court's opinion itself.
Oh, straight from the horse's mouth. Always the best source.
Exactly. We're going to get right into the legal reasoning, right?
Yeah.
See how they tackled this pretty unique issue. And you know, it's interesting, too, because there's been some analysis written about this case, you know, sort of looking at it from different angles.
Yeah, the ripple effect of the decision.
Yeah, exactly. And so what we're going to try to do today is really just break down, you know, what were the facts of this case? Mm. What was the reasoning of the court? And why should anyone care?
Especially our lovely law student audience.
Exactly right. So you know, for folks out there who are thinking about a career in law or who are already, you know, in law school, you know, this is a case that I think really brings up some fundamental questions about the legal system.
For sure, the ethics of it all.
So, all right, let's dive in.
Let's do it.
So we're talking about a guy named Walter Gursky. He was a podiatrist.
Foot doctor.
Yeah, foot doctor, right? And he had filed for bankruptcy back in 1994.
Okay, so not in the best financial shape.
Not in a great spot financially, right?
Yeah.
And then a few years later, 1997, he gets sued.
Uh-oh.
For medical malpractice, right? A patient of his, her name was Susan Lee.
Okay, Susan Lee.
She alleged that, you know, he was negligent in his treatment of her between 1995 and 1996. So, you know, pretty standard medical malpractice suit.
Yeah, happens all the time, sadly.
And so, as often happens, Gursky's malpractice insurer, AIG.
Big insurance company.
Huge insurance company. They appointed, you know, a law firm, Rosenblum and Phelan, LLC, to represent him.
All right. So they're on the case.
Right. Standard procedure.
Yeah. That's usually how it goes.
But then things get a little messy, right? Because AIG takes a look at the claim and says, you know what? This actually isn't covered under Gursky's insurance policy.
Oh, so they pulled the rug out from under him.
Essentially, yeah. They said, hey, you're on your own. You got to find your own lawyer.
Whoa, that's tough.
Yeah, so now Gursky's kind of in a bind. And this is where, you know, things start to really take a turn.
Yeah, this is a turning point, I'm sure.
So it's July 6, 1998, and Rosenblum and Filon, you know, they file a motion to withdraw as Gursky's counsel. They're like, look, we can't represent you anymore. You need to find someone else.
That makes sense. Yeah. Ethically, they probably have to do that.
Yeah. They told him to seek new counsel.
Okay, good. They're at least trying to be helpful.
Right. They're doing their due diligence there. But here's the kicker, right? Neither Gursky nor the firm showed up for any of the subsequent settlement hearings in this lawsuit.
So they both just, what, ghosted the court?
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah.
And you can imagine that's not a good look.
No, the judge is not going to be happy about that.
No. And it had some serious consequences. A default judgment was entered against Gursky.
A default judgment? So that means?
It means they basically said, well, you didn't show up, so we're assuming you're guilty, and we're awarding the plaintiff, Susan Lee, a bunch of money.
Oof. How much are we talking?
We're talking $152,000.
That's not a small amount.
No, it's a significant amount of money. Especially for someone who's already filed for bankruptcy.
Right, who's already struggling.
And here's the even crazier part. He wasn't even notified about the default judgment or that the law firm's withdrawal had been approved.
So he's totally in the dark about all this.
Completely oblivious. He only found out about this judgment in December of 1998.
So months later. Yikes.
Months later. And so, you know, you can imagine he's probably feeling pretty lost and confused and probably a little bit angry at this point.
I would be furious if I were him.
Right. So now Gursky's in a situation where he owes $152,000.
Mm.
But remember, he's already bankrupt. He can't pay this.
Yeah, he's in a real pickle. So what does he do?
This is where the case takes a really wild turn.
Mm.
He comes up with a solution, a creative solution.
Okay, and I'm intrigued.
He proposes assigning his potential legal malpractice claim against Rosenblum and Filon, the law firm, to Susan Lee, the woman who just won a $152,000 judgment against him.
Wait, hold on. He wants to give his potential lawsuit against his old lawyers to the person who sued him.
That's exactly right. It's like saying, look, I can't pay you this $152,000, but I think my lawyers messed up. And if you sue them for malpractice, you might be able to recover that money from them.
Wow, that's thinking outside the box.
It's a very unusual move, right?
Extremely.
And this is where the bankruptcy court gets involved, because Gursky is bankrupt, so this potential legal malpractice claim becomes an asset of his bankruptcy estate.
Ah, so it's not just his to give away anymore.
Exactly. And believe it or not, the bankruptcy court approved this compromise.
They said, sure, go ahead and give your lawsuit to the woman who sued you.
They did. I mean, you can imagine the bankruptcy court's probably thinking, well, this is a way to potentially make sure Susan Lee gets paid.
I guess so. It's unorthodox, but it kind of makes sense from their perspective.
So with the bankruptcy court's blessing, Gursky sues Rosenblum and Fallon for legal malpractice.
So this is getting interesting. We've got a lawsuit within a lawsuit now.
Right. There's a whole legal tangle.
Yeah.
And this malpractice case actually goes to trial.
Wow. It goes all the way to a jury trial.
Yep. Jury trial. And guess what? The jury finds in favor of Gursky.
They said the lawyers messed up.
They did. They said, yeah, you know what, Rosenblum and Phelan, you guys committed malpractice? They awarded him $136,800 in damages.
Not quite the full amount, but still a hefty chunk of change.
Yeah, substantial. And remember that agreement that was approved by the bankruptcy court?
Oh, right, the assigning thing.
This award is now assigned to Susan Lee.
So she's essentially getting paid from the lawyer's mistake.
That's exactly what's happening. But it doesn't end there.
Oh, no, there's more.
Rosenblum and Phelan, the law firm, they're not happy with this outcome. They appeal.
They're like, hold on a second. We don't want to pay for this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so the case ends up before the Connecticut Supreme Court.
This is it. The big leagues.
Right. And this is where that central question that we started with really comes into play. Can a client legally assign a legal malpractice claim to their adversary in the very lawsuit that gave rise to the alleged malpractice?
That's the million-dollar question.
And the Connecticut Supreme Court said no. They said, this is against public policy. You can't do this.
So they shut it down completely.
They shut it down. They said it's not enforceable. And they had some really good reasons for doing so.
I bet they did. This whole situation sounds like a minefield of ethical issues.
Right. I mean, one of the biggest concerns they had was the potential damage to the attorney-client relationship. This is like sacred in our legal system.
I know, yeah, attorney-client privilege, right? What you tell your lawyer is supposed to be confidential.
Exactly. And the court was worried that if you allow this kind of assignment, then the opposing party, the person who sued you, could potentially get access to all these confidential communications you had with your lawyer.
That's a huge breach of trust. Like, how could you ever feel comfortable talking to your lawyer if you knew that anything you said could end up in the hands of your opponent?
Exactly. It undermines the whole foundation of the attorney-client relationship.
Totally.
And that's not the only concern they had. They were also really worried about collusion.
Collusion, meaning?
Meaning, you know, in this scenario, Susan Lee, the plaintiff, she actually has an incentive to see Gursky's defense in the original lawsuit fail.
Mm-hmm.
Because the worse his lawyer does, the more money she might be able to get out of the malpractice claim.
Ah, I see. So it creates this perverse incentive for her to actually root against the person she's suing.
Exactly. And that's just, it's just not a good look for the legal system.
No, it looks bad. Like, it's supposed to be about finding the truth and justice and all that, not about scheming to profit off of someone else's misfortune.
Right. And the court was also concerned about potential conflicts of interest for lawyers.
Conflicts of interest? How so?
Well, if lawyers know that any malpractice claim against them could be assigned to their adversary,
right,
then they might be hesitant to represent certain clients.
Right. Yeah, especially clients who might be more likely to sue them later, like if they're already in financial trouble.
Exactly. And that could really limit access to legal services for people who are already in a tough spot.
Right. So it's a double whammy. Not only does it mess up the relationship between the original client and lawyer, but it also potentially harms future clients.
Yeah, it's like a ripple effect. And then, you know, on top of all that, the court was also worried about the commercialization of legal malpractice claims.
Commercialization, meaning like turning lawsuits into products.
Exactly. They didn't want to see legal malpractice claims become just another commodity that could be bought and sold. It felt like it cheapened the legal profession.
It takes away the seriousness of it, right? Like, these are real people's lives and livelihoods that are at stake in these lawsuits.
Yeah, it's not just some abstract game, right?
No, it's real life with real consequences.
And so the court basically said, look, These public policy concerns are just too big. We can't allow this kind of assignment. It's just not right.
They drew a line in the sand.
They did.
Yeah.
They said, this is where we have to say no. And Justice Katz, who wrote the opinion for the court, he actually had a really powerful quote about this.
Oh, I bet. I'd love to hear it.
He said, and I'm going to quote here, "This counterintuitive claim and reversal of roles requiring the assignee to bring a claim for legal malpractice when she was the very party who benefited from that malpractice in the underlying litigation would engender a perversion that would erode public confidence in the legal system."
Whoa, perversion. That's strong language. You can really tell he felt strongly about this.
Yeah, no, he definitely did. And so what was the final outcome of all this? The Connecticut Supreme Court reversed the trial court's judgment.
So they undid the jury's verdict.
They undid. Remember, the jury had awarded Gursky that $136,800.
Right, the money that was supposed to go to Susan Lee.
The Supreme Court said, no, that's not happening. They ordered the lower court to enter a judgment in favor of the defendant law firm, Rosenblum and Phelan.
So the lawyers got off scot-free.
Essentially, yeah. The court basically said, even though the jury found malpractice, this assignment was invalid from the start. It's against public policy.
Wow, so the bankruptcy court's approval didn't matter in the end.
It didn't. The Supreme Court said, look, bankruptcy court, we respect you, but this is a bigger issue. This is about protecting the integrity of our entire legal system.
That's a powerful statement. It's like they're saying some things are just more important than money.
Exactly. And so this case, Gursky v. Rosenblum and Phelan, it really sets a precedent in Connecticut. It says you can't assign your legal malpractice claim to the person who sued you.
It's a bright line rule. No ifs, ands, or buts.
Right. And, you know, for our listeners out there, especially those of you who are law students, I think there's some really important takeaways from this case.
Definitely. It's a case with a lot of layers.
Yeah. First of all, it just really highlights the crucial importance of the attorney-client relationship. It's the bedrock of our legal system.
Right, that confidentiality, that trust. It's paramount.
Exactly. And secondly, it shows how courts, especially appellate courts, they don't just look at the specific facts of a case in isolation. They also think about the bigger picture. They think about the potential impact of their decisions on the legal system as a whole.
They're playing the long game, trying to ensure that justice is served, not just in this one case, but in all future cases as well.
That's a good way to put it. And thirdly, this case, you know, it really kind of forces us to grapple with some fundamental questions about legal ethics.
Oh, yeah. The ethical implications are huge.
Like, where do we draw the line between protecting the legal profession and ensuring accountability when lawyers make mistakes?
It's a balancing act, for sure.
It is. It's a tough one. And so I think, you know, as we wrap up this deep dive, it's important to leave our listeners with a final thought.
Oh, yes. Something to ponder.
Exactly. Given everything we've discussed, where do you think the balance should lie? How do we protect the integrity of the legal system while also ensuring that people who have been harmed by legal malpractice have a meaningful avenue for recourse?
And beyond just this specific scenario, what other situations can you think of where assigning a legal claim might raise these kinds of thorny ethical and public policy issues? It's a question that goes far beyond just this one case.
Yeah, it's a question that I think every lawyer and every aspiring lawyer has to grapple with. And so we leave that with you to think about. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Gursky v. Rosenblum and Phelan, a case that, at least in Connecticut, changed the way we think about legal malpractice claims.
Definitely food for thought. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Thanks for being here.